There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome, good person. This is the Nerdist Podcast number 724. What you got on the community corkboard? I should stick with one jingle for the corkboard. There isn't one.
I like the different ones.
That's Nerdist Community Corkboard.
Well, if there are any fantasy football fans that listen to this podcast as well, this guy didn't write in his name, but he and his friend have a podcast called Fantasy 30, and it's a podcast to help you set your lineup and make the best decisions coaching your fantasy team. And you can find it at fantasy30.com.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, which I'm a fantasy football.
You're in the fantasy sports?
I'm drafting next week, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And is this something that you think about late at night? Like, who do I pick? And
I do mock drafts. I'm really into it. I go in there and
Is Anthony into this stuff?
No,
your boyfriend?
Not at all.
He's not into it at all.
Yeah. He does not give a shit.
Now, on Sundays, are you yelling at the TV with football? And he's like, why don't we talk more?
I usually go out to watch football. I go to a bar because Scout gets very upset when I watch football, especially if it's the Niners, and I'm like screaming.
So
she gets
an act
really
of mercy,
afraid. Yeah.
You don't watch football in front of your dog, who is the chillest dog in the world.
She like gets so nervous, and like sometimes he'll be in the other room, and she'll come in the other room and like try to hide under him.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
There is something that I want to promote about At Midnight, which is we're about to go on. We're on hiatus right now. We're on hiatus. We are back the day after Labor Day, and we are being moved to 11 o'clock. In the Daily Show slot for 2 weeks before Trevor takes over.
Oh, awesome.
So At Midnight will be at 11 o'clock. Don't do the math on it. I know that it's not
change
called
the
at
name
11.
Of the show.
No, we're not changing the name of the show. How dare
at
you?
At 11.
No, we're just only for 2 weeks.
All right.
So please watch us at 11 o'clock for a couple weeks. I'm very excited. We're almost like we get to sit at the big kids table for a couple weeks, and then we'll go back to the kids table, which I'm totally fine with. This episode is Oscar Isaac, who... I'm pretty sure you probably know who Oscar Isaac is if you saw Ex Machina, but he is a guy. Oscar is going to be winning Oscars. He is a guy that is going to he may be one of the finest actors of our generation.
He's so good.
He's so good and
intense,
but not like a rah rah intense kind of guy. He's got it. Whatever that thing is that you're supposed to have,
that
he's got it.
That quiet intensity.
That quiet intensity, and also. You know, he plays Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse, and he's in a movie called Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
That little indie film.
Yeah, that little indie upstart film that he's in helping. I hope it works for those kids. You know, I hope people go see that movie. I'm very excited though, and he was great on the podcast. He's now promoting a show called Show Me a Hero on HBO. 2 episodes air every Sunday on HBO, or you can just watch it on HBO Go and HBO Now.
It's so good. I've been watching
it. Oh, you have? Yeah. Excellent. So this is Oscar Isaac. This episode also brought to you by Tales of the Borderlands, Episode 4, which I'm in Tales of the Borderlands. I'm in a thing that that is sponsoring the podcast. I'm excited. I play a character called Vaughn. Episode 4 is now. You can get episodes 1 through 4 of Tales from the Borderlands. You got it on Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, 4, PC, Mac, iOS, Android.
Everywhere.
How many more platforms do you need to play Tales from the Borderlands? But the reviews have been great, which makes me very happy. Because I don't want to piss off the gaming community by doing a lousy job in a game that they're playing.
You want to do more.
I want to do good.
Yeah.
I want to do good. So Tales from the Borderlands, episode 4 right now. Episode 5 is coming out in the fall. And there you go. Here's another podcast, number 724 with Oscar Isaac.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
day just start?
Yeah. I mean, my day, I guess, ended at 4:30 this morning, and then this is the next thing after waking up.
Oh my God! Well, you look great.
Thanks.
You don't seem like you went to bed at 4:30 in the morning.
Thank you. I did scrape my nose pretending to be firing a fake gun, so that
Fun. I think a lot of times it's good for an actor to get stuff like that because it really sort of feels like I earned this.
I did it.
I'm doing shit.
Yeah, the laser did that to my nose.
The way a laser would. Yeah, the shit's real, man. You don't know what it's like.
Shoot laser beams.
Yeah, man. What'd you do today? Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, you built a road or you put a school together? All right. Okay, fine, but lasers. I mean, you're like everything that's going on for you right now, this is such an incredible moment. This is I always love seeing people kind of start to tip into, I mean, I don't know if you see it that way. But you do know that you're in an X-Men movie and a Star Wars movie, and
yes, I'm aware of that.
I mean, I'm sure that has crossed your mind at least once or twice. But I'm always interested, especially with someone, because I know you went to Juilliard.
I did.
As an actor, kind of dealing with the film business or dealing with the, do they teach you anything about film acting at Juilliard? Or
we had like 5 sessions with a teacher that was teaching us film. Mm-hmm. Andre Belgrader, who is a Serbian guy, would smoke. He'd actually smoke a cigarette with a cigarette holder, and he was bald. And
they still have those?
Romanian. And he'd just put a camera on us, and he'd be like, just think fish. And we're like, what? And he's like, just think of your favorite fish. Like, that's how you act for film. You know, think about maybe your favorite fish to eat or swimming fish. That was his. That's what we learned at Juilliard as far as film acting.
So now whenever I would like to pretend now that every time I see you in a movie, I'm like, I wonder what fish
what
Oscar's
kind of fish?
Thinking
that's
of. Right
totally
now.
Salmon.
That's
I can
a salmon.
See that in salmon.
That might be a perch. I think I saw a little bit of perch.
I guess it has something to do with the mind at work, you know, which is that's what, you know, a camera likes to capture is a mind working, regardless of what it's working on.
Sure, because you're so much under a microscope when you're film acting that I think sometimes you can see when someone's trying to put the acting on their face.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not in their head.
Or I think also it's, you know, acting. I think acting in general, but particularly for film, is more expressive than communicative. So when you're trying to communicate an idea, you kind of see it and you resent it as a viewer, even unconsciously, you know. And then when someone is actually just expressing whatever is inside of them without real worry about how it's coming out, that's a little bit more compelling to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I almost kind of, now that there's so much pajama acting because of effects and green screen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Pantless acting.
All right. I guess I'm in wardrobe now. I'm in this weird green jumpsuit. And yeah. I mean, I just feel like, it seems like with film, there's so many other weird things that you have to sort of get around.
Yeah.
To put yourself in a moment.
Yeah. Where you're, yeah, I think that's actually the danger with some of that green screen stuff is that you're like, I have to communicate that there's a laser beam and a beast that's coming at me or a ship or there's all this stuff. And that's, I guess, that's why it's so difficult because it becomes a little bit stilted and it's hard to be expressive in that, you know, and just be like, hey, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. So broad strokes, what's the story of Force Awakens, start to finish, and then how does the movie end?
There's lots of stars.
What? Are there wars?
There's a couple wars.
Is there a force that maybe is asleep and then it's like, oh, it's time to get up? Does there a force that wakes
up? Yeah, there's coffee and a bagel.
I think everything that, first of all, that the panel was incredible.
Yeah, that was very cool. It was both of those things were, it was neat that we did both of those together.
Unbelievable. And first of all, it was great to see how emotional people were in the audience to see, because obviously, you know, I mean, I'm sure you had the same experience that we all had. Star Wars is a very meaningful thing to so many of us. And, you know, we're sort of in a culture where things get retooled and done again, or stories get extended and they're not always amazing. So people have been burned, and so they just want to make sure that, you know. I mean,
you sound incredibly cynical.
I'm speaking on behalf of the audience. I personally, as soon as Force Awakens was announced, people were like, "What do you think is going to be any good?" I said, first of all, I'll decide when I see it.
Yeah.
And second of all, if we have the opportunity to have an expanded Star Wars universe so that we can tell new stories and we can look at different characters. I mean, the Star Wars universe is so expansive.
Yeah.
Then why wouldn't I want that? Of course I would want that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I understand it, too. I understand, you know, and it's good. It's good to scrutinize everything. It shouldn't just be like, oh, but because it's something that I grew up with or because it's something that at one point was a great movie, that we should just give it a pass. So I do get that. And also, look, I wouldn't blame you or blame people for being a little cynical because, you know, a lot of stuff is done for maybe not the best of reasons, you know, solely monetary reasons or to not lose a property or
exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. Spider-Man.
But that being said, it's still amazing when that stuff comes out and just the possibility, you know, it's the excitement of the possibility of something being great. And in this particular situation, JJ is so enthusiastic
yes.
and such a rabid fan and is coming from all of the right places. I mean, he's like the classic kind of like, you know, what you want Caesar to, you know, the whole thing with Caesar where it's like, no, he has to refuse the crown. He refuses the crown and then he takes it up. They're like, that's the God we want, the one that doesn't want to be.
Yes.
You know, and so it was like that. You know, he didn't want to do it. He wasn't sure. And then once he you know, found his way in and you know, it's everything that I think that as a Star Wars fan myself would want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that he has been seeding all along with Instagram and the Omaze videos and everything and also letting people know, like, it's not all CG, there's some really cool, you know, and getting to, even in the rehearsal before we did the panel the night before, we had a rehearsal. And he was so wonderful and so funny, and Kathleen Kennedy was there, and she was amazing. And there was – this is not just a, hey, let's just make Star Wars because we can. They are so emotionally invested in it, and so – it's so important that – and I think in that panel, people really, really felt that. That piece that he showed, the behind-the-scenes piece, was stunning. I mean,
yeah.
It was just beautiful.
I mean, even something like that has so much heart in it. And you see where it's coming from. I know you feel it on screen as well. And even that, even the whole, like, it's practical, you know, so many practical effects versus CG. That's not a gimmick, you know, that's for a real reason. It's not about just bragging rights or whatever. That's because it's about connecting to something real. And it's about, feel, you know, it's about the stuff that's, the intangible qualities that make you fall in love with something and make people that are on set commit to it fully, you know, to be like, there's a real X-Wing there and there's plenty of Falcon, and that enthusiasm bleeds through, you know, even if you can't tell, even if it's not, you know, it's not so much about, you know, because one is so much better looking or, you know, it's less about that. It's really about, you know, what the creative aspects of making a film and putting something together and telling a story with a lot of heart.
Do you have a process for when you first start working with a director of, you know, because obviously I'm sure there are moments where you're trying to feel each other out. Okay, I want to see how you work. I want to see how we work together, how this is going to – I mean, do you kind of have your own sort of subtle interview process with a director where you try to
– I just steamroll them, you know, with
I got
pure
this,
talent.
I got this, Coens. I know what I'm doing. Just sit back.
Sit back, Coens.
Yeah. my character's name's in the title. I think I
got this.
I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I mean, or is there, you know, do you kind of have to get some of your, do you have any fanboyism in you that's like, oh my God, it's Coen Brothers, or it's, you know, is it, do you are you able to get around that? Or when you get on the set, are you just like, nope, this is work and I know how to do this?
No, that's the inner struggle the entire time. It's the battle between I'm supposed to be here and what the fuck am I doing here? This is crazy. They're going to see that I'm a fraud. How did I even get into this room? You know, that's the constant battle of trying to have ownership over what you're doing and also the uncertainty of it. And so that's why it's kind of an extreme sport, you know, because you're just throwing yourself out there and purposefully in some ways humiliating yourself and getting it wrong on purpose to free yourself up to just be alive, you know? And so that's a very – it can be a very humiliating process.
Yeah, especially because, you know, especially with the Coens, you don't – it seems like there must have been points throughout their career, especially when you look at movies that are much more caricatures, like Hudsucker or Raising Arizona.
We're so heightened, right?
I wonder if the actors are like, you want us to do what? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, you know, just talk like this for a while. I promise, you know.
You know what? But they don't go. I think that somehow they're able to infuse the scripts with tone. Mm-hmm. You know, for them, that was the coolest thing that Joel said to me at one point. He's like, you know, for me, directing is just tone management. And I thought that was really interesting because it's a very gentle hand. I mean, the difficult thing with them is that they never compliment. you know, or even, I mean, they'll say when something's wrong, but they kind of, you know, very early on, I realized, oh, I can't go to them and be like, was that good? Because they'll just go, meh.
Uh-huh. If we didn't tell you to stop, then you should assume that it's...
Yeah, if we're moving on, I guess we got it. And actually, that ended up being a very freeing thing because I just had to, you know, trust that they'd let me know when things were not working, and I had to trust myself that that was fine, and in a way kind of got rid of a lot of that neuroses because I wasn't constantly going to them for approval. They would just, when they really liked something, they'd go, huh?
I know, especially if you have a theater background, you know, if you're doing a live theater, like, ah, they love, oh, I nailed it. You can feel the energy of a room, but how do you know? I mean, how do you know when you're doing the right thing?
Yeah, with them on that movie is just whenever I felt the worst, just emotionally the most damaged and depressed and sad. They'd be like, that's when they'd be like, nice, that was good.
Did you have to take a vacation after that movie to clear your brain a little bit?
I mean, I was so thrilled the entire time. I mean, I was elated the entire time. So, that I mean, the acting feat there was just not showing how stoked I was to be there and to be playing that character.
Do you envision a time where you, like, do you feel like, you know, sometimes maybe I need to pop back and do some theater and pop back and do film? Like,
yeah, I definitely want to get back on stage. I'm trying to get something going at the end of next year.
Oh, listen to your schedule. Yeah, the end of 2016. That's pretty exciting. I mean, it's exciting.
No, it's good.
You know, when you're a young Juilliard student, like, full of hope and promise and, you know, I'm sure.
Fear.
A fear, of course. Yeah. You know, it's like the idea that you would even know what your life is going to be like next week. I mean, anytime you can have a period where you go, yeah, and I'm working through the end of, I mean, that's insane.
No, it's the first time in my life it's been that situation. And it's actually a little bit unnerving in that way too, because for me, it has always been kind of a month to month life for a long time now. And then to be like, oh, wow, I'm got a year and a half of my life that's totally mapped out of where I have to be and what I have to do and who I have to be working with and in one of the situations not having even read a script, knowing that, you know, that's a little bit of a different place to be in. But it's great. It's great to have that kind of security, because for so long, as soon as I would finish a job, I'd be like, all right, well, that was it. That might be the last time. So now what? What's next? What's next? I got to get another job. Because, you know, you get fired at the end of every job.
Basically,
Every 3 months you get fired.
You're out. Clean out your locker.
Yeah, exactly.
What do I do? Nothing. We're done.
Yeah.
That's how these work.
Yeah. So to be on the other end of that, it's exciting. Yeah.
It's almost like it's almost like Tinder with actor and movie studio. Where it's like, oh, I'm swiping. Swipe. All right, good. Swipe. Well, this isn't for permanence.
I think you just made an app.
What? Did I?
I think you just created an app.
Actor, ACTR. This is actor, and you just go on and you just swipe, and studios just play. Yeah. Some people turn out to be crazy, and, you know, it's the way it is. But it is that there is very much that kind of because you're in temporary relationships, and also just the idea that, you know, you instantly kind of bond with a group of people, and almost like in some cases I would imagine like you've been friends forever.
Yeah.
But then when you're done, you may, even though your intentions are to hang out with those people forever, you may not see them again for 2 years.
No, it's true, and it's a very heightened sense of intimacy. It's very quickly,
of course,
kind of thrown into the field, and you know, you're humiliating yourself in front of each other, and yes, you grow close very quickly, and it just happens. Then you go and you have a new family and a new group of people that you get intimate with, and. It's a very slutty lifestyle.
It is. I mean, it is. It's an emotionally slutty lifestyle, because you can't. I mean, it's so, I think, counterintuitive to the way humans normally live in the sense of you sort of seek comfort or you seek, you know, something that's a little more certain. And you're, I feel like in this business, every time you start to feel that, you just get knocked over. And it's like, okay, you got to pick it up and start it over again.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And early on, that was a weird thing to get used to. I'm like, oh my God, we're best friends. This is amazing. I had a new best friend. And then like within a month, I'd be like, hey, man, what's going on? And nothing.
Nothing back. You
know, nothing back. Nothing back. And I was like, what? I thought we were – we cried together.
Yeah, we killed that drifter together. Remember we had that blood pact. Now nothing?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, it's also the nature of humans. You stay, you know, it's like literally the people that are closest to you, you know, physically, you know, those are the people that you tend to stay close to.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, you leave and you live in different places and it's hard to stay in touch.
It was really nice to see how, cause the one sort of wild card at the panel was like, I wonder how Harrison Ford's going to be. Cause I've seen him be cranky and I've seen him be jokey cranky and then. But he was so sincere, and it seemed like he got a little choked up on the panel. And it was so nice to see what could have been, you know, I had to do this again, but I didn't. But he seemed so genuinely happy to be there.
Yeah, I was taken aback by that too. I think it has a lot to do with JJ as well, and just like I said. Creating that environment where it was just devoid of cynicism. So even someone made of, you know, leather and nails like Harrison Ford would come in and be like, touch me inside. Touch my heart. You know, you're like, wow, man. So yeah, that was very cool. He's hilarious. He's so dry.
Very much. And I think
I will say this was the coolest part of all Comic Con. But when we were backstage right before we went on, he's like, "You want a shot of tequila?" And I took a shot right out of his little flask.
Oh, it was so cool! I was like, "Are you serious?" Yeah, you're just like scraping your lips and like putting them on a little magnet slide. You know, I've trapped some of his DNA.
Let's recreate him in the lab.
I know. Well, I was super nervous, just in the sense that. I took a picture with all of you guys backstage, and I was trying to do this dumb selfie diary of all that. I moderated so many panels, and so I was so nervous, and I ran in front to take the picture, and then when I took like four of them, and I didn't look, and I ran away, and I fucking blocked Harrison Ford with my stupid head in every picture. I'm like, no, when am I going to get those people together again? It was such a... In the end, the comedic value, I think, was just as much. Yeah. You just see the sliver of his cheek
there,
off
I swear
the sun.
He's right there.
That's Harrison Ford. Well, I can't see him. No, but I swear he's there. But it really seeing the reaction that people had to that footage, because you know, I know when you work on something, I'm sure you go, "Why? I feel like this is good." You never know.
Yeah. No, usually I'm not thinking that.
No?
Yeah, usually it's I don't know. You know, I really don't know how it's coming across, or you know, it's rare that, you know, usually everyone would be like, "Yeah, it's fine, it's good," or "It's really great," but it's hard to trust that when you're on set shooting it. No, really there's very rarely a sense of how it's coming across or even how it's going to come together. I don't think anybody knows. That's why it's kind of a crapshoot, you know, making a good movie. It's so hard. You don't know. Sometimes the pieces, you think you got them, and then you're there, and you put them together, and you're like, it's not what I thought it was going to be, or it's not quite working. And, you know, and that's why, I mean, 75, you know, it's like nowadays, you know, oh, the movie's doing additional shooting or reshooting. It's a disaster, but it's like, you know, 80% of movies have reshoots and reshooting because you just don't know. It's hard to – it's very hard to tell.
And also, you're now in this – you're in this – interesting place where you're working on stuff that you can't talk about at all. I mean, like, even the fact that they announced Poe's name was
right.
Like, oh, now we know a character's name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What can we say about it? And that's what's weird about doing panels before a movie comes out is, you know, you guys are all in this position where there's just not much you can say.
I know.
Well, he's a guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have to like get together before and be like, okay, can I say this? What can we say? Is, you know, what are the parameters? What has been released, what's not released, you know, it's a tricky thing to navigate. But at the same time, trying to get people excited about it and give bits of information that don't, you know, that don't spoil it.
I almost feel like you would have to hire, you should have someone on your team that you pay just and that they're under strict NDA, just so you can call them and go, oh my God, this happened today, and this is what's going to happen, but they're never allowed to tell anyone. Because you can't, who are you supposed to?
Yeah, it's called my family.
Your family. You were born in Guatemala?
I was, yeah.
And is your family back there? Is your family?
I've got some family back in Guatemala. I grew up in Miami, so I came when I was about 5 months old to the States. And so I have family in Miami, and my dad's in Tennessee now.
What? Where?
He's in Tullahoma. It's about an hour outside of Nashville.
I'm from Memphis.
Oh, nice, man.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so he's been there for a bit now, for a while now.
Do you go to Tennessee?
Yeah, I do. It was about a year ago now that I've been.
Nashville's great.
Yeah, it's a cool place. Yeah, it's kind of like music there is like basket weaving. You know, it's like a craft.
Yeah.
It's in airports, and it is. Yeah, it's very different. You know, it's not quite like the artsy thing. It's more of it's like a craft.
Yeah, and even the sort of, you know, what would normally be just kind of throwaway bands that just like, oh, it's a band playing at the airport. They're like world-class musicians.
Yeah,
like everyone's
it's
so
wild. And every hotel has a stage, you know, a little stage where people play and open mics and all that. It's a very unusual place.
Do you play there? Or did you go when you were doing Llewyn Davis? Did you go like perform places?
I didn't perform down there. I did that in New York mostly. Yeah. But no, when I'd go visit my dad and then we just kind of wander around downtown Nashville and check it out.
Have you ever thought about like, hey, you know, maybe someday I'll just start doing some music stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do.
I know you sing.
Yeah, but I record music all the time, and I've been doing that for a very long time. So yeah, there's, you know, there's a great guy named Gabe from the Punch Brothers. Who,
oh yeah, oh
band.
My god,
yeah.
I know all those. Noam and all those.
Yeah,
like,
Noam and Gabe Witcher and of course Chris and Pickles, and I mean those guys are amazing, and so we've been kind of trading music back and forth and talking about recording some stuff.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
Yeah, it'd be killer.
Is that what is there? Is there an instrument that you want to play that you don't currently play?
Yeah, kazoo.
What?
But I feel like mastering the kazoo. You know,
how do you master the kazoo?
No, guitar. I think that's
no.
That's
let's get back to the kazoo because I feel like you saying that, and I'm like, you know what? There's probably someone on YouTube where you're like, oh, you're fuck, like, oh, wow. That's how you play a kazoo.
He's the Yngwie Malmsteen of kazoo.
He's a kazoo Malmsteen. And there's all these like kazoo purists are like, no, you don't even know. And then you'd see it and go, oh, fuck. I mean, I can't watch more than 3 minutes of it, but I get why that's technically impressive.
It's horrible to listen to.
My ears are hurt. My brain can't process most of the sounds, but I get it. I get why that's hard. Where did you grow up in Miami? My mom's from Miami. I spent a lot of time there.
So yeah, mostly South Florida. I was in Kendall, and then I went to high school in Palm Beach. So
nice.
A little bit more up north.
Nice. So do you identify with your Guatemalan roots? Is your family very culturally Guatemalan, or just because?
Well, my dad's Cuban.
Oh, your dad's Cuban.
And he grew up in D.C.
Okay,
so he was kind of a hippie, and he played music, and so he was more into, you know, American rock culture and that kind of thing. So, I grew up more with that, but going back to Guatemala a lot and being very close to them. So yeah, I definitely, you know, that's all in there.
If I were gonna go to Guatemala, where should I go?
I think Antigua is just so beautiful. It's one of the last, fully intact colonial cities in all of Central America, and it's just so stunningly beautiful. And the air there is just so sweet. And there's all these coffee plantations up in the mountains and the volcanoes that you see everywhere, and that just brings this amazing air down. And then Lake Atitlan, which is this huge lake surrounded by seven volcanoes, is it?
Wow.
So it's an amazing place. It's a staggering beauty, and you know it's also very complicated because there's such poverty as well, and the disparity between the rich and poor is pretty massive, especially as the city grows, and it is growing a lot. In some ways, negatively. I mean, it's just areas that used to just be beautiful forests are now just getting overrun. It's an amazing place, and There's also incredible stories about the place that I'm interested in telling as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Because it's even in the United States, where it's easy to go, oh, you know, there's not really a lot of history here because the country's relatively young. Like, no, there's history here. We just built over most of it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's indigenous history here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those stories are are wild. You know, you start to read some of the stories, you're like, oh, that's where Avatar came from, or that's where this came from.
Right.
You know, it's like the conquest, the Spanish conquest of the Americas is a crazy, horrible, fantastical story, you know, and so there's a lot there, and there's even recent things that have happened there that are pretty wild.
So now that you're kind of getting into this place where it seems like you have a little more control over the things that you pick and choose and do, this is a story that you might want to delve into a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, it's like I said, it's just there's just dramatically interesting stories.
As a director, do you want to direct or do you want to write?
Yeah, potentially. You know, I'm definitely looking at that again. For a while, I thought that I was going to – that was the direction I was going to go in until my dad said I sucked at directing.
Maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about.
No, yeah. No, you know, I was doing it a bit, but at the same time, I was actually working as an actor, you know, and I would do the movies with my friends. And so, you know, the time came, I was like, well, should I go to film school, or, you know, I got accepted in Juilliard as well. What should I do? And, you know, he said, do what's before you with all your might, and what's before you is acting. And I was like, yeah, that's true.
This is a very dramatic way to put that.
It's a biblical, I think it's from the Bible, actually. And so, yeah. He also was like, you're not a director.
Was that in
he also was like, you're not a singer.
Oh, come on.
He's just giving me the fire. You know, yeah. He's just fueling me.
That was in the Bible, too. It says you're not a singer.
It says you're not a singer in the Bible.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, do you have like a strong Cuban Catholic background?
No, not Catholic. Evangelical. I grew up as a like, born-again evangelical Christian.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like tent revival kind
of
thing.
Oh, my gosh.
That's actually huge in Central America. It's one – I think it's like the – either the first or second biggest church, evangelical church, is in Guatemala.
Wow.
It's massive. I went to it when I was down there in February. It was like 30,000 people. It's insane. And that started as a tent revival place.
Oh my gosh. So what's the ultimate – what is the premise behind evangelical Christianity? Like what is it – because it's obviously a very passionate –
basically, you're going to hell.
Right.
And, I'm going to go to heaven.
Right, of course. Yeah. And
that's kind of it.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
So do they just repeat that over
to
everyone outside this tent?
Yep.
It's not going to go well for them. You guys are good.
You guys are good. Not that guy.
Not that guy over there. Oh, come in. Okay. He's okay now.
He's all right now.
He just gave
it. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's basic tenets of Christianity, but it's just, you know, it's just mixed in with, in a way, it's mixed in with a little bit more of, you know, they have bands that play, and they've got like rock bands. I went to this thing called Cornerstone when I was in high school, which is like a Christian Woodstock. And they have like, it was like, a Christian Coachella kind
of
thing.
Sure.
And they had like Christian metal bands and Christian hardcore bands and all sorts of different tents and all that. That was pretty wild. But no, you know, it's
I'm drunk on the power of the Lord.
But you know, so they, you know, they're still religious. I you know, that changed for me. You know, when I started to read. No, when I kind of, you know, around like 17, 18, it kind of shifted a little bit.
Yeah. But you know, when you look at it, it's just it is another form of powerful storytelling. You know, I mean, and it. Everyone I talk to, you know, from all different facets of the business, you know, musicians, directors, writers, actors, it all, and even that part of our culture as well. Even like, it all comes down to story. Like people just want good stories.
Yeah, absolutely, and also death.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like that's you know, when you trace back, you know, religion, it's directly connected to grave sites.
Sure,
and it's like, all right, well. You know, this primitive man, they just kind of put the dead, but just die. And then suddenly it's like, oh, no, they're putting their dead in little rows and they're putting little stones. And those stones are becoming more elaborate. And suddenly there's a ritual. And then it comes out of these rituals. And it's, you know, just people dealing with death. And how do you deal with that? And where do they go afterwards? And what do we do for their bodies? And,
right.
You know, so it directly springs from that. So I don't, you know, that's always going to be the case, no matter how much we learn or
and
not.
How do we try to maintain some sense of control in a completely nonsensical, uncontrollable world that we don't know? I mean, especially, I mean, I always try to imagine what it must have been like in those sort of mid-range stages of hominid development where it's like, you know, we're smarter than monkeys, we're just sort of becoming humans.
Yeah.
And but we're also people are becoming aware. We're becoming self-aware. Humans are becoming self-aware. And how do they understand, like, oh, all of a sudden I'm just here.
Yeah.
And what was here before? And then what happens? I mean, I know we still think about those things, but I mean, when you had no
context,
no
way,
context,
right?
No science, no anything.
Yeah.
How
but then you
see,
something like, you know, Cave of Forgotten Dreams or something, and yeah. You see the cave drawings down there, and you're like, wow, you know, same shit, different cave. You know, it feels like it was just like a switch that turned on.
That's it. Listen, if they ever made an R-rated Flintstones movie, how was work, Fred? Same shit, different cave. Like, that's the perfect.
yeah. I mean, it's also like you said, storytelling. It's language. You know, it's like someone figures something out. They have an epiphany. Like, oh my gosh. You know, in a way, it's like with acting. We're you know, with a director trying to act, trying to direct some actors. It's like we want the same thing, but what's the right sentence that's going to unlock this moment for you?
Right.
You know, we're trying. We're all kind of going towards the same thing, but I have to use the right words in the right order so that you don't become self-conscious, but that you get it as well, but you don't feel like I'm condescending to you. So in a way, I feel like, you know, religion's very similar in that way. You get a guy that's like, oh, I know the sentence,
right?
That'll help you like live. So if you but you have to say these words and say them just like this, and it'll unlock it all for you. Like,
the key,
like some sort
yeah.
of incantation. If you don't say those words, you won't get it. So I kind of get – I understand that because I have the power of language and the power of words. But it's all towards the same goal.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, everything is – that's such an interesting way to put it, that there's so much of our life is basically – I think
semantic,
everyone –
you know?
Well, yeah. But I think everyone wants, you know – social spells to use. How do I unlock? What do I need to say to unlock relationships, or what do I need to say to unlock success or work, or you know, in comedy, it's how can I craft this spell so that it creates a comedic effect, a
yeah.
response.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is. It's so funny how that kind of thing, that seek for that, for everything, distilling it into a formula, is so pervasive for everything that we do. And yeah. the truth of the matter is, we just don't know anything.
Pretty much.
We don't know anything.
Same shit, different cave.
The same shit, different cave. Same shit, different cave. I feel like that should... That could be the title of your movie. That could be the title of your movie. Same shit, different cave. You know, a study of humanity throughout the Americas. You know, from...
It's good.
I What's happening out there? Move it! Someone's
not happy.
Kyle, go kick the shit out of that guy.
Mom,
all right, he's done.
Not now, Mom.
Is your mom texting you now? I get texts from my mom all day during work. I'm like, you know I'm at work, right? I know. I love you, too. I love you, too. Do you have a good...
Sweet mom.
Do you do? So, obviously, you have a good relationship with your mom.
I do.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's so... I feel like, especially because... It seems like you have a nice relationship with your family, and for everything, especially that you're about to go through, I would imagine, in this business, if you didn't have a strong foundation and a strong sense of family, I feel like it's not hard to see why people get so fucked up so
yeah,
easily.
Yeah, you talk about not having context. I mean, you just kind of lose it, and the pace of it is pretty wild. And yeah, you know, you're home, you know, very little. So yeah, it can be a little bit tricky. But yeah, they're great and they're so funny. And they, you know, my dad will come visit and say things that are demeaning and hilarious. And
is he just fucking with you, do you think?
A little bit. Yeah, yeah. I think he does that as well. Yeah, he does. But he helps me a lot, too. He's a smart dude. And so, you know, with Ex Machina, for instance, you know,
movie.
I sent it over to him and, you know, we would talk about it. And I remember he got really hung up, because he's a doctor, and he got really hung up on how we described the robot's vagina.
Right.
And because in the script, it was described as there's a cavity between her legs. And he's like, that's horrible. It's a horrible word. You know, cavity. You don't want to call it a cavity. And I was like, all right, well, what should we call it? And so we like went through all the different words we could use to describe that. And so we came up with an opening, which uh-huh. seemed like that was a nice kind of way to describe that. And Alex was like, yeah, that's good. All right, so we'll call it an opening. And so we did it. And I was like, Dad, what'd you think? He's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's bullshit.
But we spent all
like,
this
time. We did it. We did what you wanted to do. And he's like, yeah, I don't think it's going to work. And he's up there. I mean, I'm like, I still have 3 weeks of shooting. And he's like, said.
So a little help, huh? You said opening. Before we, it's not a cavity. What do you want? Come on.
The whole thing hinges on that.
Yeah, that's where it all falls apart for me. It all falls apart for me in this robot's vagina. I'm so sorry. This is where it all.
It may have had a point, though. You know.
Oh, that movie was so. I love a, and you know, it's. I think it's why 2001 was so great and why Star Wars was so great. And it's just when you have essentially a beautifully shot art film, but about sci-fi.
Yeah,
oh, it's the best combination because Ex Machina looks like a so much of it just looks like a moving painting. Mm-hmm. That movie, and your character was the perfect sort of like that Silicon Valley sort of aggressive, passive aggressive. he's obviously the smartest guy in the room, but also like Jesus Christ, you know, it's like that guy was such an amazing, and I feel like a pretty right on character.
Yeah, that was pretty great when I got that script and read that, because that was all in there, you know. I've kind of seen some people that have been like, oh, you know, so you improvised that, right? Because I finally saw the real you, and I'm like, no, that was all the script. That's not me.
You know what? I think that's an incredible. I'm sure if you're the writer, you're like, hey, wait a minute. But as an actor, if someone thinks you improvise stuff, that's a pretty huge compliment.
Yeah. No, it was funny. It was actually someone, you know, it's tough when you do some of these movies too, with all these dudes and all these guys and everybody's, you know, kind of not alpha mailing it, but kind of beta mailing it. You know, everyone's like nervously nice, but you know, fun, and everyone's so good at stuff. And you know, sometimes I can get a little shy or a little quiet. And that was this guy that was saying, he's like, yeah, you know, I saw that movie, and I finally saw, you know, you, your personality, all the funny stuff you do, and you know, so you improvise a lot of that, I'm sure, right? And I was like, no, that's. That was all written for me. I just kind of memorized it and then said it. Tried to say it real.
Yeah, I try to make you believe that's a real character.
He was disappointed. He's like, oh,
yeah.
So you're actually this boring in real life.
Yeah. The movie wasn't a documentary. It was scripted.
I wish it was, but yeah. No, that was.
Hey, where'd you guys get a robot? Where'd you guys get a fuckable robot? I'm trying to find. Like, I don't. This is just a movie. Like, it's just a story. It's a simple story. But a really genius story. And one, without giving away spoilers, I really did not predict the ending. I really did not. And maybe other people did. But just that last kind of moment was the, oh. I mean, the movie's really kind of, it's like a kick in the balls.
Yeah, it is a swift kick in the balls.
It's a swift kick in the balls. It's like a fucked up Twilight Zone episode. You're like, oh, of course that's what happened.
But even, I'd say even if you do, even if there's a, if you feel like that was the inevitable thing that was going to happen, it's not, I don't think the whole film is predicated on whether the twist is seen or not, you know, so much. Yeah, it's really about where you place the viewer places himself in the story, you know, where you're identifying, and what you bring to it, which is really great about that, you know, in a way it's a Turing test for the viewer.
Sure,
you know, it's like where is your, what do you believe is conscious?
Right.
You know? If you believe that's just a toaster and he can do whatever he wants to it, then that's, you know, that's maybe you're failing the Turing test.
Right.
It was interesting. It was even more explicit in the script originally, but I think that they ended up, you know, for whatever reasons, not going down that path. It's also hard because there was a point when it would switch to her perspective.
And he took that out?
Yeah. Also at that budget level, I mean, if you think about it, we spent half of that budget just on making her.
Sure.
So the rest of it's like a BBC drama, basically, budget, you know? And then you spend like $8 million to make the robot.
Yeah.
So it's it was pretty wild. So, you know, doing the perspective, because the idea is that when you switch to perspective, it's completely alien.
Of course.
She doesn't hear sound. It's just like pulses and
oh, wow.
You know? And so that was like when she goes out to the helicopter. That was in the script. So you really are like, oh my God.
Right.
She wasn't conscious. But you're like, but maybe she was. It's just a different consciousness than
right.
Just because it's different doesn't mean it's not alive. And, you know, so it continues down that road. But you still get that with what's there now. You know, your first impulse is to be like, oh, she was lying.
Right.
But that doesn't mean she's not conscious.
Right.
So,
that's so interesting. Yeah, because just because she wants to survive,
yeah,
like that can be proven.
Yeah, or has selective empathy, like everyone,
right?
Doesn't mean it's she's just a killing machine.
Do you think there'll ever be a sequel where it's just sort of like following? No,
I mean,
I'm glad. I'm kind of glad to hear that, but I also like I want to see what the I want to see where that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely the beginning of a robot apocalypse. There's.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's like, it's funny because I've talked to people. They're like, why didn't he put a kill switch in it? Or why didn't he do this? And it's like, no, that's, he wanted one to get out.
Right.
You know, he was waiting for one to get out. If you actually follow it and you hear what he's saying about, you know, with the Bhagavad Gita and, you know, all this different stuff, he's waiting to create the one that gets out.
Right.
So
he literally has a God complex.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Or he knows, he's like, our extinction's right around the corner. The great filter is coming.
Right.
And it's just a matter of time. And one of these days, they're going to get smart enough that one's going to get out. And so when one finally does, especially the one that he didn't think was going to, you know, that's why that fucking Unreal thing, that's what that's about, you know? Like, holy shit, it happened. It's kind of like cool and sucks for me.
This is like the exact reaction that guy would have. Like, it was the exact, oh, fuck. Like, he just doesn't. It's like it's funny because he understands that there are things greater than humanity, but he's still in a way somehow puts himself above all that stuff.
Yeah, as if he can look down and see it.
Yeah, exactly.
From it.
Or, exactly.
In a way, it undercuts the seriousness of it too, which is important with those films too.
Of course.
It's as serious as it is to have someone that's kind of commenting on the whole thing and seeing things as they are. And
right.
If you look at it again, you know, he never lies. He equivocates, but he's always telling the truth.
Right. Right. But he's definitely manipulating.
Sure.
I mean, there's definitely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
definitely. But, and also, you know. You know, who do you think is the most human character of in that setup? You know,
right.
is it him or is it Donal? Is that how you say his
name?
Yeah,
Donal. Yeah.
Or is it Donal? I mean, like Donal's the one that you obviously, I think most people empathize with the most.
Sure, because you relate to him because he's just
a dude.
Yeah, he's a dude going into a weird world and dealing with this stuff and getting the information as the audience gets the information.
Yeah, and you worked with him on Star Wars as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of geeked out on him because he's in a show called Black Mirror. That's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And it's funny because a couple of times I've met people who were in Black Mirror, and the first thing I say is, oh my God, I loved you in Black Mirror. And they're always like, thanks. Because I think to them, it's just like.
Yeah, but Donald's like that with whatever you say.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, totally. I was like, man, Frank, I've seen it 5 times. He's like, oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, 5 times.
Yeah, he's very self-deprecating that way. He's a very humble dude, but he's great. He's so great. And I one of the funniest people I've ever met. I mean, doing press with him is such a blast because he's so stupid with the shit that he comes up with that he says, and it's so fun, man.
Are you even remotely emotionally prepared for the junket for basically November? Like, there's going to be like a six week junket for you starting in November.
No, because I'm going off to shoot something, so I got kind of off the hook. I mean, I'm going to do a couple weeks, but I get to. I mean, I'm working.
Oh, that's great.
Sorry, my hands are tied.
What am I going to do? I would love to be there for your space movie, but I got shit to do.
For your space movie.
JJ, I was sorry. You know.
Whenever I see him or if we're texting around, I'm like, how's the space movie? Like, it's just funny, you know. Yeah. Just try to undercut the fact, like, this is Star Wars.
I know, man. I mean, it's the same thing with shooting X-Men. You know, it's like we're standing around with capes and weird stuff and all that. We're like, what are we doing? This is so
That's so weird.
Dumb.
Yeah. And then when you see it, you're like, oh,
wow. Yeah. Yeah. But it is. It's a very strange thing.
I mean, you get to play Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That's a pretty.
Yeah. That's been pretty fun. Especially these last couple of weeks, we've been shooting the ending and it's been really cool.
Were you guys up in – I was at the Montreal Comedy Festival. Were you guys shooting up in Montreal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were shooting up there, yeah.
Because a bunch of people were like, I think I saw, you know, I saw so-and-so. Or there was this like, I saw Jennifer Lawrence or I saw Fassbender just at one of the comedy shows.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what are they doing?
And
they're like, oh, I guess they're shooting X-Men.
Yeah, we've been
there.
Shooting up there in Montreal.
How do you like Montreal?
Great city. Yeah, it's a great city. It's very relaxed.
How's your French? They like it when you speak French.
Yeah, yeah, not so good. But man, they're very nice people, and it's very fun, and it's dangerously relaxed up there. I mean, you go to have a meal, and if you sit at the bar, they just start sending you shots,
yep.
and shots, and if you refuse, they get very angry at you.
If you refuse, they get angry. If you're somewhere, they get angry. If you don't speak French, they get angry. If you tell them you're American, you get angry. If you tell them you like Toronto, they get very angry.
They're a little edgy.
They're a little edgy.
It's such a crazy mix between Europe and North America, and it's French, but it's a very unpretentious kind of thing over there. Yeah, I love it. I love it up there.
Yeah,
and but shooting has been a lot of fun too. I mean, it's intense. It's intense being in all the prosthetics and the suit that I have to be connected to a cooling suit at all times. If not, I'll die.
Oh yeah, sure, of course.
It's so heavy, but yeah, it's pretty great, man.
That is again all the stuff that you're just not prepared for, I think, in acting school. Like, act with a weird costume on and prosthetics, man, and something blocking your field of vision, and still try to try to pretend.
The sweat that's trickling into your ear that you can't reach, it's fine, use it.
Somehow, yeah.
What am I supposed to? It'll make you frown more. It's good.
It's part of the character. I discovered it's part of the character.
But to dispel something, there's photos that came out that everyone seems to think Apocalypse is purple, but if everyone actually looks closely, everyone's purple because there's a light that's purple.
Okay.
Yeah. Then in actuality, he's kind of a grayish blue.
Okay.
Look.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, so he's not. Yeah. I mean, like,
it's more inspired from X-Men Evolution.
Gotcha.
Which is, the tint is slightly bluer, but it's one of those things. No matter what, it is not a CGI replica of one of the comic book. There's like six or seven, you could call definitive looks. Whether it's X-Factor or X-Men when it came out, or Age of Apocalypse, or the cartoon, the '90s cartoon, or X-Men Evolution. But it's not that. And I don't think Singer's never really done that. Singer's, it's an adaptation.
Sure.
It's inspired by the comic book. And for some people, that's enough to be like, I don't want to see it. And that's fair enough.
Sure.
But that's also one of the fun things, and also one reason that made me want to be a part of it. As much as I love Apocalypse and particularly X-Factor, which is the comic book that I collected when I was a kid, and being evangelical, growing up evangelical.
Of course.
Playing the second coming. I mean, and my parents were obsessed with the second coming. My sister reminded me about that. I had forgotten it. She's like, no, there was like photographs and stuff of like the second coming. There was a huge, my grandma's house, there was a huge picture of Jesus, of a massive Jesus knocking on the UN. It was a painting.
Hello.
Yeah.
Can I come in?
I'm here.
It's so funny because this whole idea of the second. What time do you need to go? 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, it's all right. I mean, I don't think I want to do like the grooming thing, but it's not till 12:30, right?
Right.
All right, so we can go in like 10.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah.
That'll give us some time to ramp down.
If we do 7, that would be fantastic.
Just because 8.5. 8.25.
8.5, you got a deal.
Okay. 8.5. I just feel like I was on Pawn Stars. What do you give me for this Oscar Isaac? 2 minutes. Okay, can I have 10 minutes? Give me 7 minutes. How about 8? I can close at 8. All right. Now I've just used that 2 minutes with my stupid Pawn Stars gag. I love this idea, though, that it's like this idea of the second coming of Jesus being this insanely like cataclysmic. It's like, the first time he came around, it was
pretty mellow.
He was a dude. Yeah. He was a carpenter,
Yeah.
Like, would people even recognize? I feel like if Jesus came like, hey, I'm Jesus, people would be like, fuck you, you're not, because I think they expect him to, like,
supposed to be 12 feet tall and riding a horse.
How come you're not knocking on the UN door, huh? I got a painting. Come on, man.
Do the painting thing.
Hey, how come you're not white? I thought you were supposed to be white. No, I grew up in the middle. What are you talking about? I'm not white and blonde.
Exactly. It's that's more about conquest.
Sure.
The idea that when he comes back, you guys are going to be in trouble. And a little bit, that's kind of the idea that we're taking with Apocalypse. The idea is that, like, he wakes up and he's like, oh, no, it wasn't supposed to be like this.
Right.
You guys are in trouble.
Right.
Now it's judgment time.
Yeah.
And the world is on the brink of collapse. Consciousness is going to be extinguished, and it's up to this being who's done it throughout history to be the ward
of course.
Consciousness and to call the herd in order to, in order to assure the survival of the fittest.
I think the one thing that's very comforting to me is that, you know, when you talk to previous generations and they talk about the generations that were before them when they were younger, every generation has always said the same thing. The world's going to shit.
Mm-hmm.
This has got to be the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, it must have just been like, well, it's fucking over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so true.
It is. But it's exciting. I think it's always nice for people to hear that you were a fan of the thing that you are actually depicting.
Yeah. Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because then it's meaningful. And then it has some meaning to you, and to know that you liked X Factor and that this was and now you're getting to be this guy.
Absolutely. I mean, and for us, you know, and for me in particular, you know, it's a collaborative thing. So the look of the thing, all of that is something that's done by amazing artists and everyone coming together and being inspired by a variety of different things. But for me, even more importantly than the design or whatever is the engine of the character. You know what he actually represents, and it's like, you know, in a way it's like Greek theater, it's kabuki, it's this kind of. It's mythical proportions, and it's very rare. You know, I can make jokes about standing there in like a suit and being all weirded out. But the truth is, as an actor, you don't often get a chance to do stuff like that. It is like mask work. It's you're trying to express very heightened emotions. And what's fun is that we're going there. You know, we're really, you know, trying to portray and embody what he represents.
Yeah.
And that's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's so wonderful to talk to you, and you're such a sweet, down to earth dude, and I'm very. It makes me even happier for success, and I'm so happy to see the next. Is there anything coming up that you want to?
Oh yeah, well on Sunday is a HBO miniseries called Show Me a Hero that we shot in Yonkers, and it's about something that actually happened in Yonkers in the late '80s and early '90s, where a federal judge ruled that the city of Yonkers was purposefully segregating by keeping a 90% of the minority population in 1 square mile of the city. And to remedy that, they had to build 200 units of low-income housing in the white part of town, East Yonkers, and the city imploded. And this kind of shit's happening right now.
Sure.
In Westchester and all around. So David Simon, who did The Wire and Tremé and Generation Kill, he wrote it with a guy named Bill Zorzi, who also wrote The Wire, and Paul Haggis directed it.
Oh, wow.
And it's, and so it premieres on Sunday, and there's 6 episodes. It'll be 2 episodes Sunday, and then the following week, 2, and the following week, 2. And it's an important story, and I had a great time doing it, and I have a mustache and a mullet in it.
Finally!
Yeah, most importantly.
Yeah, well, because you have a pretty sick beard in X-Men. I mean, that's a pretty great beard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, wait till you see the mustache.
The mustache is even better. Think, this ain't your daddy's beard. This is a mustache. And I also want to say, if you want me to talk to your dad and to tell him to stop giving you shit, I will totally. Is it Hernandez?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Hernandez?
Yeah, 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 Dr. Hernandez.
Fucking leave Oscar alone. Do you hear me?
I'll run you out of Tennessee.
I'll run you. I will come to Tennessee. I know where you live. Leave Oscar and his vulvic aperture.
That's what it should have been.
A vulvic aperture.
Yes.
And also the name of our band. It's the name of our bluegrass band is Vulvic Aperture, playing with the Punch Brothers. All right, good. I'm glad we established this.
Good, good. No, Dad, Pops is doing it to strengthen me. It's good.
It's good.
Nah, no, he's hilarious. He means it well.
Oh, good, yeah, good. Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy everything that's happening in your life, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of yours. Anything else in the down the road that you can mention?
Down the road. Well, I'm going off to shoot. The reason why I won't be able to do the Star Wars press stuff is I'm going off to shoot Terry George. He's the guy that did Hotel Rwanda, and he's doing a film called The Promise that we're going to be filming in Spain about the Armenian genocide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a story that hasn't really been told, at least very often at all. So we're going to be shooting that.
You just you're going to run out of really cool directors. They're going to have to like dig up Kubrick and be like, all right, we dug him up so that we can have someone, you know, a great director that you haven't worked with.
Oh
yet.
Man, there's so many that I haven't worked with. I'm dying to. So
you're almost collecting like A-list directors like Pokemon. You know, just like
my cards.
You got your bun, your Pokeball. Like Spielberg, I get a Spielberg sore. You know, like you got to catch all these guys. Oh, but man. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too, man.
And coming went in. 8 minutes.
Nice. Yes.
We did it. That is cool, the man. End. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I have missed these Friday night dinners.
Here, welcome to Harvey Graw.
At these family dinners,
gracious everyone,
dysfunction is served.
I can't have you all messing things up for my entire adult life.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we embarrass you?
Jump, jump, jump.
It's already better than I dared to dream.
They're extra.
Let the wild rumpus start!
Woo, 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 woo.
And they're embarrassing.
We know how hard it is to move on from the first girl that you ever slept with.
Not the first girl who I ever slept
with. Yeah, right. You're a regular
lady killer.
I thought you said it was going to be boring here tonight.
No!
I really hoped it would be.
But they couldn't love each other more.
Surprise! It's mom and dad being totally normal.
Wow.
So, dinner next Friday, everyone?
Wouldn't miss for the world.
Dinner with the Parents, Season 1. Stream free only on Freevee.